open that closet door and take every one of those hats and destroy them. The blue hat, the orange hat.
You stop.
You will not touch those
hats.
I will destroy
you.
I will.
You
will
not.
You
keep your goddamn mouth shut.
The Solar Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered a street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
I'm fat. You haven't been beat up properly.
Welcome to episode 369 of the Solar Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, February 15, 2015. I am the Solar Monster. Thank you to everybody who is listening to this right now on thesolarmonster.com, or maybe you're listening in Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, if you're subscribed in iTunes. We also have a free Android app for those of you who want to download it. You can do so in the Google Play Store. So lots of different ways to get the sound off, and however you are listening to this right now, I thank you. Have a cool offer here this week for Audible. Want to mention this right off the bat. As many of you know, we have a custom URL for those of you who want to try the Audible service free for 30 days. It's an audiobook service. They've got hundreds of thousands of different titles. You can choose whatever audiobook you want to, and as part of your free trial, you get one free audiobook courtesy of The Sound Off. We are gifting you an audiobook. And if you use our URL, audibletrial.com/solarmonster, you can now pick up for free the new Shawn Michaels book, which is called Wrestling for My Life. The book just came out this past week. It is brand new. It is up in the Audible store right now. And if you go to audibletrial.com/solarmonster, from there you go through the sign-up process. You've got to give your information. You will not be billed. You can cancel at any time during the 30 days. And you will not be billed, but you get to keep your free audiobook. But you can only get it by signing up with our URL. So punch that in. It sounds like an interesting book. I mean, from the description here, it talks about, you know, Shawn Michaels talking about the highs of his career, the lows of his career. He's got some stories in there that have never before been shared about, you know, the lowest of lows that he was at. He had a lot of problems back in the day that have been well documented. And then to how he has turned his life around and his family life today and a lot of the things he's involved in. So it's brand new. Get the Shawn Michaels book for free. Go to audibletrial.com/solarmonster. Sign up, and then you can cash in for your free Shawn Michaels book, Wrestling for My Life. Also want to say thank you to everybody who has donated via PayPal. I really appreciate the support from you guys. Times can sometimes be tough, as they kind of are right now. Life kind of throws you a curveball. So now more than ever, if you like what you hear every single week and you like the sound, if you want to support the show, the best way to do so is to make a PayPal donation. You can do so on thesolarmonster.com. You'll see the PayPal box on the right-hand side. And big thank you to these folks: Chuck Lunatic Lentz, Michael Deathrow Dunn, Lord Have Mercy, Versi Jones, Stephen Godzilla Griffin, the Australian Ass Kicker, Anthony Patty, still in my top five of all the PayPal nicknames I've given out, Magnificent Michael Ramo, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Hytham the Equalizer Al Nawasser, Playboy Tiago Lerrero, Guilty as Charged Mark Court, Cutthroat Charles McIntyre, David Sold Out Solace, Adam the Maniac Massaglia, Just Try Me Travis McCoy, The Bronx Bomber Robert Hordeens, and The Casanova Romeo Hughes. And Romeo is in fact his real name, which is freaking awesome. So thank you to everybody who made a donation. Again, $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. You can give however much or a little you want, and you can do so on thesolarmonster.com. You could also buy a shirt, prowrestlingtees.com/solarmonstersoundsoff. We had a big week in terms of shirts, and actually a lot of the original, just straight up Solar Monster Sounds Off logo white t-shirts have been sold this past week. I'm not quite sure why all of a sudden, but it is a great shirt, and really, If you're going to a wrestling show, if you're going to be out and we want to represent the show, the best way to do that is by buying the logo shirt. So you can pick that shirt up. There's tons of other shirts up in the store right now. The No Distraction Roll-Up shirt is another cool one, I think, if you want to represent that movement at the shows that you go to. We have another cool Sound Off logo shirt in the vein of my favorite New York sports team. All of that is up right now, prowrestlingtees.com/SolarMonster Sounds Off. They ship all over the world, no matter where you are. So if you are in the States, if you are in Europe, if you are on Mars, I don't know about Mars, but anywhere else they will ship to. And you can pay via PayPal, you can pay via credit card, whatever works for you. So buy a shirt and support the Sound Off. We are going to talk about NXT TakeOver in just a second. We're going to kind of flip the script, so to speak. I'm going to lead off with NXT because NXT kicked ass this week. Raw, not so much. But before we get into any of that stuff, got to talk about one of the bigger stories this week. And I'm not even sure it really got the attention, frankly, that it deserved. And it didn't have to do with anybody's body parts or anything like that. It concerned, of all people, Darren Young. Now, Darren Young has been back for a while now. He was gone for many, many months. I think he had reconstructive knee surgery, but whatever it was, a very serious knee injury, and worked his way back. Kind of changed his look a little bit now. He's got a beard going, and he doesn't have that, you know, he used to have the comb and the afro, and he kind of acted like a dunce. He changed his look, he changed his character up a little bit, but you would never know. Because he's never on television. In fact, I think the only TV appearance he's made on any of the major shows since he came back was on Raw, and he was standing in the background with the rest of the roster during a segment that involved John Cena. So they haven't done anything with this guy. He wasn't even in the Royal Rumble match. Well, WWE went overseas this week. They went to the United Arab Emirates. I know they ran some shows in the last few days in Abu Dhabi. I think they had three nights there. And Darren Young, who, as I'm sure everybody is aware by now, came out, not last year, I think it was the year before, came out as a gay man. Remember that whole thing with TMZ supposedly ambushed him at the airport? And, I mean, that thing was completely set up. But he came out, and he got some publicity for it. He was on the Ellen show, and I think he was in one of the gay parades and all this. And WWE did not acknowledge this at all on television. I mean, you would think for a company that loves to exploit that kind of thing, they could have gotten a lot of positive press because of it, I think. They didn't say a word. They didn't say a word about it. They didn't make a big deal about it, at least on television. If you just watched the WWE shows, you would never know. You would never know. So they went overseas to the United Arab Emirates, and they did not take Darren Young with them. And Darren Young went on Twitter, and he posted a tweet that said, "Why do we bring the best entertainment to a country like Abu Dhabi, and they look down upon women and gays?" He says, "I get it, hashtag millions of dollars." And he later deleted the tweet, went back on Twitter, posted another message that said, "My freedom of speech is gone. Gone but not forgotten. I feel like no one has my back and it upsets me. The struggle is real. I'm human." And a lot of other wrestlers, I saw Sean Waltman, Lance Storm, were tweeting words of support. I support you. I got your back. And he was retweeting all of them. He seemed really down in the dumps. And it's obvious what happened. WWE had him take down the tweet. And in response to this whole thing, they had to issue a statement. This is what WWE said. They said, "WWE does not discriminate against individuals regardless of age, race, religion, sexual orientation, and we continue to proudly support Fred Rosser, a.k.a. Darren Young, for being open about his sexuality. Unfortunately, WWE cannot change cultures and laws around the world, and thus we did not send Fred to the United Arab Emirates for our upcoming events for his own protection. WWE also fully supports Fred's right to express his views on personal social media accounts rather than WWE's corporate platforms." So that was their response. And, you know, I'm kind of surprised it wasn't a bigger story. I think this should have been a bigger story. The fact that they asked him to take the tweet down, you know, I mean, he was speaking his mind. I don't think he was out of line at all. He certainly wasn't saying anything offensive. He certainly didn't tweet out a picture of his cock or anything like that. He posted something that I think has a lot of merit. And it's not the first time that WWE has done tours overseas in a place like Abu Dhabi and places like that. And the fact that they knew enough not to send him for, as they said, his own protection because of the culture over there and their views of gays and women. You know, I've read reports before, and this tour was no different. They don't send the divas overseas for these tours because, again, the culture over there is very different. And women have to be dressed a certain way, they have to look a certain way, and if not, bad things can happen. Same thing to gays. You know, you can be prosecuted for being gay. You can be killed. You can be given the death penalty. for being gay. And you hear about something like that, and I just kind of shake my head. You know, WWE loves to trumpet this whole idea of freedom of speech, freedom of expression, be yourself, all this kind of nonsense. And this guy goes on Twitter, posts what I think is a very logical question, and they have him take it down. And to me, if I'm running an organization, if I'm running WWE, and I want to send my talent overseas, but I can't, for their own safety, for their own protection, because they can get in a lot of trouble. Something bad's going to happen to them if we send them to that part of the world. And the stuff in Iraq and Afghanistan, that's a little bit different. You know, they were going into a war zone knowingly, support the troops. That's kind of a different story. What I'm talking about is they voluntarily run a tour in a part of the world that discriminates against different people to the point where they can't send maybe not half their roster, but a good portion of their roster, their entire Divas division. And then people here and there, like a Darren Young, oh, you know, we're going to hold you back. It's not really entirely safe for you to go over there. They're probably not going to like it if we send you over there. So we're just going to keep you back here on the home base. I don't know. To me, maybe you shouldn't be running that part of the world if that's how they operate over there, if that's how the government operates. And that sucks for the fans, because I'm sure there's a ton of fans there who love seeing WWE. They don't go to that part of the world very often. And I'm sure a lot of the fans, frankly, over there are very tolerant of things, way more than the government probably is. Maybe it's not even their fault. But so what? So what? I mean, if I'm running WWE and this is how it has to be, then guess what? I'm not running shows in Abu Dhabi. And yeah, maybe it's going to cost me some money, but guess what? WWE is not going to wilt and fold if they don't run shows in the United Arab Emirates. There's plenty of other places in the world starred for WWE shows who I'm sure would welcome them with open arms. All of them, the entire roster, not only certain individuals. So the whole thing just, I don't know, it just rubs me the wrong way. Especially the fact they had him take that tweet down. Whether it's a WWE corporate account or not, it doesn't matter. I just think it's wrong. I really do. And they should be thankful that a Deadspin or a TMZ didn't really pick up on it and really rake their ass over the coals for it, because I think they would have deserved it. You know, the way I see it, when you run those shows you're running them as a privilege. It's not a right. It's not like there's a certain part of the world that's entitled to have WWE come to town and run shows. It's a privilege. And if you have to do that sort of thing and hold back part of your roster, you don't go. You go somewhere else. You go somewhere else where they'll welcome everybody with open arms. That's how I look at it. So I just think the whole situation is just shitty. Let's talk about something fun. How about that? Let's change gears here and talk about NXT TakeOver Rival, which aired on the WWE Network this past week from Full Sail University. A fantastic show. People have asked me, you know, where does it rank with the other TakeOver specials? Honestly, who cares? Who cares? They've all been great. I'm not going to sit here for 10 minutes and try to figure out which show was slightly better than the other. Who cares? The bottom half of this card, not great, but the last half, more than made up for it. What Triple H has done is succeed where WWE failed all those years ago when they rebooted ECW, in that they finally created this viable alternative to Raw and SmackDown. One, you know, it looks different, it feels different enough to where it doesn't feel like just an extension of all the other shows. Like a lesser edition of Raw or SmackDown. It has its own distinct look, it has its own distinct crowd, which I would compare in many ways to the old ECW arena crowd. Not that they're as rabid or anything like that, but just the ECW arena crowd back in the day had its own identity. Like, if you heard there was a show going on at the ECW arena, you knew it was going to be fun, and it was going to be unpredictable, and shit was going to go down, right? It had a reputation. And I think with NXT and the crowd at Full Sail, maybe it's a more PG version of what that old ECW crowd used to be, but it's probably a lot of the same people who are going to these shows. It's a small crowd, actually even smaller than the old ECW arena crowd, in that you can only fit 400 or 500 people in the audience here. But they're passionate about it. They're smart to a lot of the things that are going on. They're real wrestling fans, coupled, I'm sure, with just some college kids who wander on from campus. But it's got its own personality. I guess that's the best word for it. Its own roster, its own style of booking. I mean, everything their version of ECW wasn't. Paul Heyman, you know, I remember when they first announced plans to reboot ECW, and Paul Heyman did an interview, and he said, this is when he probably thought he would actually have some power and influence. Silly him. And he was talking about how they were going to be looking at international talent from all over the world, a lot like he did in the old days with ECW when he brought in guys from Mexico and Japan and Canada and just all over the place. He was looking to bring in international talent, and he wanted the show to have a gritty look, the way the old ECW show looked. All of these plans he had for how the new ECW would look on Sci-Fi, and in the end, it was just WWE Lite. And Heyman got so frustrated by the booking and everything else and fought with Vince McMahon that by the end of, '06, he was gone. He quit, he was fired, whatever happened. Heyman was gone, and he wasn't back for many years. And WWE's version of ECW just continued to flounder, and I was never really a huge fan of it. I mean, some guys were able to kind of get their feet wet on that show, like a young Jack Swagger. There were some people like that, but it wasn't what it could have been. It was a lot of wasted potential, I think, with that whole thing. And that's why it failed. That's why TNA has failed to break through. WWE Lite, once you get that label, you're dead in the water. That's it. You get 3 hours of Raw every Monday night, then 2 hours of SmackDown. You get these pay-per-views every month. I mean, who wants a watered-down edition of WWE? I don't want to see another version of WWE. I get enough WWE. I get far too much WWE. I want something different. And that's what NXT brings to the table, just like a Lucha Underground. That's what Lucha Underground brings to the table. That's why NXT and Lucha Underground, week after week, are fighting for the top spot of best show of the week. You never hear TNA in the running, although, they've improved, I guess you could say, from where they were even a year ago. TNA is not dreadful like it was once upon a time. But you don't really hear about TNA. Ooh, TNA was the best show of the week. Raw was the best show of the week. I mean, you'd have to wake up in an alternative universe to actually hear that because it's the same old stuff. NXT offers something different. It's something fun. When these specials come up, when we have these takeover specials, it's funny, I get all giddy. I genuinely look forward to these takeover shows. I feel the way I used to feel when Monday Night Raw would go on back in the late 90s, to be honest with you. You get that feeling of, well, I can't wait to see what happens on the show tonight. Now, back then, it wasn't so much, I can't wait to see who's going to have the best match on the show. It was more, I can't wait to see what, Austin's going to do to McMahon this week. I can't wait to see what happens next with The Rock and Mankind, or what DX is going to do, or whatever. Whatever, all the crazy, wacky shit that was going on back then that you can't really get away with now. So instead, I think people's attitudes have changed. It is more about work rate and how great a match you can have. I mean, the personalities still matter and the promos and all that. It's just different. It doesn't mean it's bad. It doesn't mean it's worse. It's just different. And the fact that we only get, 4 or 5 of these specials every single year, it reminds me of the old days when you had the Rumble, you had WrestleMania, you had SummerSlam, Survivor Series, maybe throw King of the Ring in there, and stories had time to breathe. So basically what Triple H has done here is create his own version of a WWE indie promotion, except this indie promotion has some of the best talents anywhere in the world that they've plucked from other promotions. That's really what he's created here. As far as match of the night, my pick, if I had to pick a match of the night, I've got to give it to Finn Balor and Adrian Neville, but the women came pretty damn close. The women kicked ass on this show. I just can't say it was a better match than Balor and Neville. Zayn and Owens, very good also, but it also felt like this is the first match of a lengthy feud. Like, midway through the match, after some of the rest holds and everything that was going on, and there were a lot of matches that had rest holds on this show. I am not a fan of that at all. I think if you have a rest hold here and there, that's fine, but if I have to criticize, and this is not just for the special, but it's something I'm noticing more often in WWE and in NXT, because this is how they're teaching them, is the over-reliance on rest holds and reverse chin locks and that sort of thing. I just think if you throw one or two in there here and there, that's fine. You got to catch your breath or go over what you're going to do next, or this guy's trying to wear the other guy down. But it feels like they go to that well, they do a couple of big moves, and they go right back to it. There's far too much of that. That's old wrestling. That's something that shouldn't be anymore. There's no need to see two guys laying on the mat for 3 or 4 minutes straight in a fucking, reverse chin lock. There's just no place for that. I'm not saying you got to be bouncing off the walls like they do in some of these indie matches where they don't take a breath. You can slow things down a little bit, but the over-reliance on rest holds I'm not a fan of. And we saw a lot of that on the show, including in the Balor and Neville match. But that wasn't the only one, and I'm not a fan of that at all. But Zayn and Owens was very good. It did have that feeling like, all right, they're holding back a little bit because this is the first match. So I get it. It's cool. Let's see where it goes. And by the end, I loved it. I will talk more about the match in a second in the finish. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And what they were trying to do with that match also, and they even brought this up on commentary, they were trying to tell their own version to a lesser extent of Brock Lesnar and John Cena at SummerSlam, where one guy just completely dominates the other, although Zayn got more offense in this match than Cena did in that match. But that's kind of the story they were telling. So let's start with the opener. And actually, before I get to the opener, the announcers deserve an honorable mention here. Corey Graves is new to this whole commentary thing. He's only been doing it for like a month or two, maybe. And already, I mean, he's got a ton of potential. I think he's really, really good. Jason Albert, you guys know I'm a big fan of him as an announcer. I like him a lot in that role, and I think he'll only get better. I think Rich Brennan is the play-by-play guy. He's also good. Thank God they got rid of Alex Riley. He wants to wrestle again. Good. Let him wrestle. He's not going to go anywhere, but let him wrestle. As long as you get him off commentary. He was just atrocious by the end. I think if he hadn't already jumped the shark with me, he definitely jumped the shark the week before. Or maybe it was 2 weeks ago when we had the Finn Balor Hideo Itami match and we had Neville on commentary. And he just was nonstop, incessantly just asking questions to Neville in the most annoying way possible. Neville didn't even want to talk to him. He didn't even want to answer him. And he just kept going on and on and on. I'm like, God, somebody please shut this guy up. So thank God he is off commentary. We don't have to listen to him anymore. I think these three right now, at this moment, are the best announced team in WWE. That's how good I think these guys are, and can get, too, as time goes on, as long as they don't break them up. So we have the opener, Hideo Itami and Tyler Breeze. I am a fan of both guys, especially Breeze. I think he is very underrated. Doesn't get enough credit for the kind of worker that he is already. And he goes in there when they need him, whether it's with a Sami Zayn or a Hideo Itami, or I think was it with Finn Balor? He had a match with one of those guys also in the last few weeks. And he just kicks ass, you know, and by the end of these matches, they're always chanting, this is awesome. Tyler Breeze is the constant there, you know, and he was also a star in that Fatal 4-Way they had a few months ago as well. Everybody got a chance to shine in that match, but I thought Tyler Breeze maybe was the star of the night in that match. So I don't think he gets enough credit. They've incorporated now some new elements into his shtick. He comes down, he's got the selfie stick, which works for him. I think, you know, I've talked about selfie sticks on this show before, and how if I ever, you know, bumped into somebody on the street with a selfie stick, where that stick would end up. But for him, it works, because he's a heel, right? You're supposed to hate him. He's a douche. So he comes out with this furry selfie stick, and they had a woman, a groupie. She's a Tyler Breeze groupie, come out of the crowd to try to hug him, and they carried her off. And she's one of the new signees they have there in developmental. I don't know her name, but I don't know if she'll be a permanent part of the act now, but I thought that it was clever. It was nice. You know, they're trying to add some new elements to the entrance for him. This was a really good match. As far as an opener, I thought it was a great way to start the show. There was a picture-perfect super kick from Breeze to Itami at one point. Itami sold it like death and then kicked out at the last minute. We got another GTS tease from Itami in this match. Place went nuts, but Breeze wiggled out of it, and Itami ended up winning with a running kick to the face. I am still not a fan of that finish, whether it's the GTS or something else. He's got to come up with a move, I think, that he can stick to and that people can really get behind. Because, I mean, sometimes the kick will look brutal, but it's still, it's not impressive enough, I think, for a finish for this guy. And hopefully once they build and they build and they build and eventually he hits the GTS, maybe they'll let him just use that from now on as his finish. I figure, I mean, maybe they're saving the eventual GTS for when he wins the title. I mean, he did promise. Remember when he debuted and he did that promo on night one and they introduced him as Kenta and he announced that from now on I'm going to be known as Hideo Itami and I'm going to become the NXT champion. You know, he came in as the babyface promising, guaranteeing he was going to win the title. He made that promise. So it probably is going to happen at some point. I'm just wondering if maybe they're holding off on the GTS until that match where he finally wins the title. But this was really good. Baron Corbin and Bull Dempsey was up next in a no disqualification match. This was not so good. This did nothing also to change my mind that Corbin is far from ready for prime time. You know, in the last few months I had floated some ideas. If you really wanted to debut a new guy from NXT, have him make an impact, then you got to keep Rusev undefeated through WrestleMania. Because everybody is figuring that if not at Fastlane to John Cena, this guy is going to be beaten by somebody finally at WrestleMania. But what if you kept him undefeated? What if he shocked the world and he remained undefeated? And him and Lana, they came out on Raw the next night, cocky as all hell, threw out an open challenge. Nobody can beat me. It's been almost a year. I'm still undefeated. And then out comes Baron Corbin as the big, this nearly 7-foot-tall guy comes in and he just lays out Rusev within 30 seconds. You talk about making a statement in your first night. Especially if he can get Rusev up for that end of days finish, which is pretty cool. You know, when he gets a heavier guy up for it, it looks nice. But then I saw him in the match with Adrian Neville a few weeks ago in the number one contenders tournament. And that really, to me, is where he was exposed. It was probably the longest match he's had to date. He didn't do much. I mean, the few things he did looked impressive. But that was where I saw him for the first time and I said, he's not ready. The night after WrestleMania is actually not that far away, and there's no way he's ready for prime time by then. So he'll definitely benefit by spending more time down there, getting more seasoning, working longer matches. I think long term, he still has a lot of potential. He's got the size they like. And I've said this before. If you've got the size, if you're a tall guy, if you look a certain way, you're always going to have more opportunities than a smaller guy. Smaller guy has to work that much harder. You know, guys like Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and Daniel Bryan and CM Punk, all those guys had to work harder than a tall guy would, because they're not going to get as many opportunities as a bigger guy is going to get. That's just how it is. Poor Bull Dempsey at one point went looking for something under the ring, maybe a table, but he didn't find it and just gave up. My biggest gripe with the match is that they made this match no disqualification. That was the stipulation going into it, no DQ. And my question is, why? Why was this a no disqualification match? Yeah, I figured, okay, Dempsey cost Baron Corbin the title in the number one contenders tournament, and he gave him his first loss on NXT. So they made it DQ because Baron Corbin would come out and just obliterate this guy, just destroy him. And that didn't happen. And then you have Bull Dempsey grabbing a chair from the outside. The first time anybody went for any sort of weapon in this match, and it was for the finish, he grabs a chair, goes to use it, and doesn't even use it. Gets it knocked out of his hands, laid out, 1, 2, 3. No weapons were used at all in this match. This absolutely did not have to be a no disqualification match. It didn't add anything at all to the match whatsoever. And as no DQ matches go, this sucked. So, not a good match. Blake and Murphy defending the tag team titles against Sin Cara and Kalisto. Also, not good. Not good. Very sloppy match. These four just didn't seem like they were on the same page for the entire duration of this match. There were some cool moves. There was, I think, a Hurricanrana implant DDT at one point. I don't remember who executed it, but it looked wicked. But this was just a very choppy match, just not smooth at all. And by the way, the champs were introduced just as Blake and Murphy by the ring announcer, so it's true they've dropped their first names. I know the announcers mentioned their first names a whole bunch of times on commentary. I just chalk that up to being more out of habit than anything else. It'll be phased out over time. So Blake and Murphy win, they retain the titles as they should have, the outcome was the right one. Then we got to the good stuff. We had Adrian Neville against Finn Balor, finals of the number one contender tournament. Just a great match. It started a little slow, like they were feeling each other out, and it picked up from there. My favorite spot of the entire show came during this match. It was when Neville went for the red arrow. He landed it, but Balor got his knees up and then very quickly cradled him for a near fall. Such a great spot. Everybody was convinced it was over right there. I was convinced it was over right there, but he kicked out. And then we had Balor kicking out of a Phoenix splash by Neville off the second rope on the inside. Balor hits a big drop kick, sending Neville back into the corner. Follows through with a high double foot stomp off the top. I mean, he got some height on this double foot stomp. Got the clean pin. Finn Balor is your winner. He is your new number one contender. A little disappointed he didn't have some new body paint. It was the same body paint we saw in the last special, but it still looked badass. And I'm thinking he's probably saving the other body paint for when he makes the main roster, which is where he should be right now. If there's anyone in WWE with a better entrance than this guy right now, I would love for you to point them out to me, because I don't think they exist. I just can't wait to see what that entrance looks like in Dallas at WrestleMania next year, because if they have any sense about them, he'll be on the main roster in the next few months, and he will be in a top match at WrestleMania next year. And I'm sure that entrance is going to look wicked. Charlotte, Bayley, Sasha Banks, and Becky Lynch, fatal four-way for the Women's Championship. Great match. One of the best women's matches that I can remember ever seeing. I busted out the Diva stopwatch for this, which I rebranded the Women's stopwatch because that's what they're called on NXT. Women. 11 minutes, 54 seconds was the time. So just shy of 12 minutes. It wasn't the 17 minutes that Paige and Emma had a year ago on the Arrival special, but still, plenty of time they gave these women. Becky Lynch, at one point, another one of my favorite spots from the show, besides the red arrow into the cradle on the last match, Becky Lynch launched Sasha Banks through the air at one point with a pump handle suplex. She looked like Taz back in the ECW days, just throwing guys around. That was great. Banks is the one, though, who really impressed me during this match. You know, she's come a long way since turning heel and becoming Summer Rae's sidekick in the BFFs, which was way back when. I don't know if it was a year ago, a year and a half ago, however long ago it was. She was just very timid, you know, this timid-looking baby face. And I remember the segment where Summer Rae was kind of chastising her backstage in the locker room, and Sasha was looking at herself in the mirror. Kind of similar to what they did not too long ago with Becky Lynch, where the roles were kind of reversed, and it was Sasha Banks who was yelling at Becky Lynch, and Becky Lynch looked at herself in the mirror, and she ended up turning heel. But to see where she's come from them to now, and also in terms of her matches, it's unbelievable. I mean, she's so much better now than she was back then, and deserves all the success that she's having now. So it's just very cool to see. She's like a totally different performer. Finish came with Sasha Banks trapping Charlotte in a brutal-looking crossface. Charlotte's like Gumby, you know? She's so flexible, so Sasha can just really crank back on the move and make it look great. It kind of reminded me of Melina in the Sharpshooter back in the day when she wrestled Natalya. That's still the most brutal Sharpshooter I've ever seen. I'll never get that image out of my head. Natty went all the way back with the Sharpshooter. I mean, all the way back with it. Broke the girl in half. Anyway, Charlotte refused to tap, so Sasha turned it into a crucifix for what was a very unexpected pinfall. She actually pinned the champion. I don't think anybody saw that finish coming. It was kind of out of nowhere, and that's what I liked about it. Also, they pinned Charlotte. They pinned Charlotte. The only time I can remember seeing Charlotte pinned was in her first match on Raw, which still makes me shake my head when I think about it. They could have easily had Sasha get the pin on Bayley. She could have gotten the pin. She could have stolen the pin on, like, Becky or something and protected Charlotte, but they didn't do that. They gave her the clean pin on the champion, which just makes her that much stronger. So I like that. Sasha was nearly in tears when the match was over. Charlotte was fighting back tears. She looked completely despondent after losing. She later hugged Sasha. Banks shoved her away, though, and mocked her before leaving. Just awesome, awesome stuff. These women are the real deal. Sarah Del Rey deserves a frickin' Hall of Fame induction for all the work she's putting in with these women down at NXT. And then we had the main event. Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens for the NXT Championship. They played that awesome video package again before the main event. They do the thing that they used to do for the pay-per-view main events in WWE, where they have that very kind of brooding drum beat in the background as they show the guy waiting to come through the curtain. I mean, little things like that just add so much more. They make the matches feel so much more special. Why they don't do this anymore on the main roster, I have no idea. It's like they lost their way. They lost their way at some point in terms of trying to make their own matches feel like a big deal. They're being outdone by the developmental league. It doesn't make any sense. So it just... It gave this match a WrestleMania feel. That's the best way I can describe it. There have been very few matches that were not at WrestleMania that felt to me like they had a WrestleMania feel or WrestleMania build to it. The last one I can really think of, maybe, honestly, it was probably at the last special. It was probably the main event with Neville and Zayn. But I go back to that CM Punk John Cena match at Money in the Bank in 2011, just the way that whole thing was built up. They had an awesome video package for it. They were in Chicago. The crowd was amped up. The crowd went crazy when Punk's music hit. It had a WrestleMania feel to it. Like, this match would fit in well as a WrestleMania main event, and it wouldn't look out of place at all. I won't say that about Zayn and Owens. That could be a WrestleMania main event one day. I'm just talking about it here more in terms of the hype and the build and the moments before they actually came through the curtain. It felt like a big frickin' deal. And so that's what I really liked about this. And then came the finish. May as well talk about the finish here. The finish basically was playing off of a worked injury that Sami Zayn suffered a few minutes before the match ended. He did it was like a springboard moonsault off the ropes. He landed on Owens on the outside and then smacked the back of his head on the ramp. Now, there are still people asking, was he really hurt? Is he really concussed? It looked brutal. I mean, it looked absolutely awful, but then they showed a replay of it, and it was completely safe. He didn't actually hit the back of his head on the ramp. If you watch the replay of it and you pay attention to it, it looks like he kind of hit the upper part of his shoulders. But it looked great. But once they showed the replay, I knew right away, okay, he's fine. He didn't actually get hurt. And then when they started playing off of it in the match, I knew this was all part of the story, and it worked. It worked perfectly. They had Owens just killing him. It looked like the ref was just going to throw it away right there. They dragged it out a little bit longer. He gave him a whole series of power bombs. I think he gave him 4, maybe 5 power bombs in total, which I marked out for big time because I am a huge fan of the power bomb. The power bomb is probably my favorite move in wrestling. I was a big fan of when like Sid used to do it, even Diesel. Everybody has their own style of doing power bombs. Like when Sid would do it, he would get you up in the air, kind of hold you there for a second, and then just drop you. Diesel was just completely reckless. I mean, he would get you all the way up and just fucking throw your ass across the ring. So everybody has their own way of doing it. You don't see power bombs very often in WWE these days. So here's Kevin Owens giving this guy 4 or 5 power bombs straight, just fucking slamming him headfirst down onto the mat. And I'm sitting there with a big smile on my face. I look like some sadistic SOB as this guy is getting mauled in the middle of the ring because we saw the return of the power bomb, true to form here on the show. And the doctors came down, including the Z-Pack doctor. He was down there. They're telling the ref, you got to stop it. And the referee doesn't know what to do. Finally, he grabs Owens and says, that's it. He calls for the bell. The place boos. It wasn't the finish that they were expecting, although once they realized the title had changed hands and the referee went to hand Owens the title, the place went crazy. So there seemed to be some confusion on that. And on that note, I'll just say this. You know, there are people online who said the finish sucked. I didn't like the finish. How does the title change hands on a referee stoppage? I mean, are there people actually debating why the championship changed hands on a referee stoppage? I mean, have you lost your mind? My whole life, I thought this was common knowledge. If the referee stops the match because you're deemed unable to continue or you're injured, it's no different than a forfeit or a submission. Last time I checked, a forfeit or a submission meant new champion. This is no different. If that's why you hated this finish, then you got to come up with a better reason than that. Because to me, the finish absolutely made sense. I knew right away before the referee even handed him the title that the title had just changed hands. I was just waiting for the announcement to be made. I don't know. I mean, it just seemed like common knowledge to me. I mean, you've got to be really out to lunch not to know that a referee stoppage in a championship match means a new champion. It's no different than a forfeit or a submission. I mean, just think about it. Take 2 seconds and just use your brain and think about this. The fact that there are people who are actually crapping on the match because of that is completely idiotic to me. Completely idiotic. Now, even with that realization, if you know that but you still don't like the finish, that's fine. You're entitled to your opinion, but don't hate on it because you didn't understand it. Just because you're ignorant doesn't mean it wasn't a great finish. I think it was a fantastic finish, especially to a first match of what will probably be a lengthy feud. I'm sure there's going to be at least 2 or 3 other matches. I mean, this could go on for the rest of the year. Who knows? But I thought for what they were trying to do here, I thought the story they were trying to tell was awesome. It was fantastic. It was different. It wasn't the finish I was expecting. Although I did predict that Owens would win the title, so I was right on the money with that. But when it was over, I was like, wow, that was actually pretty clever. We got a little bit of everything on this show. You wanted a straight-up kick-ass wrestling match? You got that with Balor and Neville. You know, you got that also with the women. This was not the best match I've seen these two guys have. But it was a unique finish. It told a story. And I love the looks on the faces of the people in the crowd. They were finding these different fans with these like shocked, mortified looks on their faces. They found some women who were like practically in hysterics that, you know, stopped the abuse. They thought poor Sami Zayn was going to be murdered in the middle of that ring. I loved it. I mean, we were talking about this last week when Triple H did the podcast interview with Steve Austin, and they led off. Austin led the interview off by saying, "Kayfabe is dead. Why do you think that is?" Well, I got news for you. You watch this show, and it's actually very much alive, at least down in Florida, with a handful of people. Kayfabe still lives. And it really hit me during this match that Sami Zayn is the best babyface in WWE right now. Not just NXT, the whole damn company. He is the best babyface that they have. And it's ludicrous that he has been stuck in developmental for over 2 years now. As much as I want this feud with Owens to just rage on for the next 6 months and climax with a ladder war, as boring and lifeless as the current WWE mainstream, main roster product is right now, these guys should be doing this on Raw each week, not on NXT. It'd be one thing to have, you know, all this awesome talent in developmental, let's say, to have all these guys tearing it up because the main roster is just chock full of so many stars and the product is so white hot that there's just no room for these other guys. So we've got NXT doing their own thing, the main roster doing its own thing, and everybody's just kicking ass, right? That'd be one thing if that was going on. But it's not. It's not white hot. It feels ice cold. So there really is no justification for a guy like a Sami Zayn to be in NXT for over 2 years. That'd be like playing a baseball game. You make the playoffs. You bench your best player. He's not hurt. He's not sick. He's not suspended. He's just sitting there on the bench, ready to go whenever you need him, and you never call him into the game, and you get fucking routed, and you lose the game 10-0. That's kind of what this is like. Same with Adrian Neville. He's been down there maybe as long as Sami Zayn has been. It feels like he's been down there for over 2 years. So I was thinking about an easy way to keep this feud going with Zayn and with Owens. Keep it going from NXT to Raw. Actually kind of graduate the feud from developmental up to the main roster. You know, we've talked about the possible ways to debut Sami Zayn on the main roster before. I once, on a Sound Off Inbox Extra on the YouTube channel, I proposed an idea a few months ago involving Brock Lesnar that I thought would make him a star in one night. Okay, so we've all batted around different ideas like this. But, you know, how's this for an idea? You get Sami Zayn getting the call-up to the main roster, and they turn it into a storyline, you know, with him kind of throwing it in Kevin Owens' face. I mean, after all, what did Owens say in the video package leading up to the match at TakeOver, right? He talked about how Sammy made it before I did. He ruined it. We were supposed to go together. We were supposed to make it to WWE together, and he got there before I did. He screwed it all up. That was part of the whole storyline heading into the TakeOver match. It ate away at him. So now he's taken the title away from his friend. He's all smug about it. But how would Kevin Owens feel if Sami Zayn comes back in a few weeks, let's say he's all recovered, and he says, you may have beaten me, but guess what? Regal just told me I'm getting called up to Raw. Guess I beat you after all. I'll see you up there. And then the look on Owens' face, I mean, how great would that be? That way, whenever Owens finally gets the call, which also shouldn't be very long because he really doesn't have any business at all being down there, once he gets the call, they can resume their feud on the main stage, and the whole world can see what these guys can do. I'm just trying to think of ways to keep a good thing going while getting these guys on the main stage where they belong. I don't want to break up the core of NXT, and I know that Vince McMahon doesn't have a fucking clue what he's doing with his own guys, let alone Triple H's guys from NXT, and that probably will never change unless Triple H takes over, because he's already, look, he's already invested so much in these guys. If nothing else, I don't know what kind of promoter Triple H will be when he gets the call that day when Vince either croaks or steps aside. Nobody can know for sure. Maybe Triple H would suck at the job. Maybe he can't measure up. But one thing I can guarantee you is that he has invested so much time into these guys. It reflects poorly on him if these guys come to the main roster and they flop. He doesn't want to see Hideo Itami flop. He doesn't want to see Kevin Owens flop. He doesn't want to see Sami Zayn flop or Finn Balor or any of those guys. So that's kind of the problem that I have with this whole thing. As much as this makes sense and I want to see this happen, there is the realization that if these guys go to the main roster, something very bad may happen to them, and it's not going to be the way it is on NXT. That's kind of the struggle I have. But at the same time, the goal here is to make it to the main roster. The goal here is to get these guys on television every week in front of 3-4 million people, to get them on the WrestleMania card, to let them make as much money as they can possibly make, because I don't know how much money they're making, but they're not making the kind of money they could be making on the main roster. So that's the ultimate goal here. The question is, how long do you wait? So I'm trying to think of different ways that we could keep a good thing going, you know, on the main roster, and not just NXT. And I think with these two guys, that would be one way to go about doing it. But, you know, of course, I don't want to break up that core of NXT, but it has to happen at some point, right? It has to. So start thinking of ideas now. I would hope that that's what they're doing. But I can't say enough good things about this show overall, especially that last half. Just everything you could ask for. Great entrances, great wrestling, great storytelling. I wasn't angry when it was over. My Twitter timeline, I mean, talk about a 180 from the way it looks on a given Monday night. I think pretty much we're all in agreement here, whether you thought it was the best of the bunch or just very good. It was an enjoyable 2 hours of pro wrestling, and if you missed it, I advise you right now, right this minute, maybe not right this minute, wait till the show is over here, but when this show is over, log on the network. It's still free for another 2 weeks. You have no reason not to check out this show. I give it 2 thumbs up. I know they've had some TV tapings. There's some interesting things that happen over the next few weeks. I didn't read any of the results. I did have one or two things spoiled for me. I will just say this. I know there were a lot of people very upset in the Facebook group that there were people just blatantly posting spoilers without any kind of tag, and not even just text. They were posting a photo. It's kind of hard to avoid if you're scrolling down and you see a photo of somebody who was on the show or something that happened. I would just ask that you try to be more mindful of that. Don't post photos, especially, that are spoiling something that's coming up on TV in the next week or two. Don't share a photo that may have been posted on another Facebook page or a meme page or something like that. Leave it there. And just try to be mindful of the other people in the group. Don't make me block you. Don't make me ban you. You know, if it becomes a regular thing, if you're a serial poster who's routinely doing stuff like that, and you're causing chaos in the group, you'll be gone. And don't get yourself booted over something stupid like that. Just be smart about it. That's all I ask. Beyond that, there's not much else I can do. If you are the kind of person who is very, very sensitive to spoilers, and you absolutely cannot see them, your whole world will just crumble around you. The best advice I can give you is just stay off Facebook, stay off Twitter, stay off social media altogether. That's the only way you're ever going to stay away from stuff like that. Even I know enough. Like, every now and then when something gets accidentally spoiled for me, you know, I kind of say to myself, you made a mistake. Stupid. You shouldn't have gone on there. And I learn from it. So the next time I won't go on this page, or I'll stay off social media if I'm watching, let's say, something on a one-day delay and everybody else has already watched it. And I know people are going to be sending me tweets all day long. I won't read any of them. I won't read any of them for 24 hours. There's a fine line between, you know, being respectful to other people, but also if you are the person who is bothered by it, be smart about it, because there's only so much I can do. There's only so much that can be done. At some point, you just have to be smart. And if it bothers you that much, if it ruins your day that much, then just stay the hell off social media. I don't know what else to tell you. That's the internet, dude. You can't hide from everything. It's all out there.
Now, the DistractionRollup.com counter.
The Distraction Rollup counter is up by 2 this week. We're now up to 7 Distraction Rollup finishes on Monday Night Raw for the year 2015. You can head on over to DistractionRollup.com. The counter is up there. It'll also give you the number of matches so far on Raw this year and a link to the No Distraction Rollups t-shirt, which you can buy right now on ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster. Sounds off. Let's talk about Monday Night Raw this past week. Raw emanated live from Columbus, Ohio. You know what annoyed me more than anything else on this show last Monday night? Of all the possible things that could have driven me crazy, whenever somebody made reference to the next pay-per-view, instead of calling it Fastlane, which is what it is, right? It's called Fastlane. Instead of just calling it Fastlane, they called it WWE Fastlane. Reigns did it. Bryan did it. They all did it. In the middle of their promo. Instead of just saying Fastlane, at WWE Fastlane, I'm going to beat you. You and I are going to have a match at WWE Fastlane. Thank God they did that, right? Thank God they did that. Otherwise, I might have thought we were headed for TNA Fastlane. Actually, with TNA, it's like the fucking carpool lane. But thank God they mentioned WWE, because I would have been confused. Maybe I would have thought it might be UFC Fastlane. So thanks, Vince. Drove me nuts. All night with this. Who talks like that? I mean, seriously, if aliens landed on Earth and attempted to engage a member of the WWE roster in a conversation, you know what they would think? They would think, holy shit, these creatures are stupid. And then they would exterminate every last one of us. The other thing they did on this show, they finally succeeded, as I predicted. I told you this would happen. they succeeded in splitting the crowd reaction and actually making Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan less popular. They both still get their cheers, but now the crowd's not so sure. Now they get a mixed reaction. Great. Just great. They set up Bryan and Reigns against Big Show and Kane to open the show. Yes, Daniel Bryan and Kane sharing the same ring yet again after we were told their casket match in a couple of weeks ago on SmackDown would be the end of their feud. So what happened here? The match ended quickly by DQ when things broke down. Somewhere in here, Bryan inadvertently nailed Reigns with a flying knee in the corner. That made Roman quite angry. And then Stephanie and Triple H came out. They made a main event later on of, now, are you ready for this? Hold on to your socks. And if you don't have any, put some on and hold on to them, because you're not going to believe this. They made a match for the main event of Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns against, are you ready? The Big Show and Kane. And Seth Rollins and J&J Security in a 5-on-2 handicap match. Bryan and Kane, again, twice on the same show. You know, Raw tanked in the ratings last week. Just a terrible number. They were down over 600,000 viewers from the week before. And nobody can figure out why. Gee, I wonder. I wonder why that could be. Some people say, oh, well, it's Better Call Saul. Better Call Saul. I didn't know Better Call Saul was a 3-hour show. How does that account for the first 2 hours? Right out of the gate, they started with a bad number and they dropped from there. You're going to blame that on Better Call Saul? I know why their number was down. How come they can't figure out how their number was down? It's not rocket science. It's very easy to see why their number was down this week. When you come out at the beginning of the show and you announce a match that people don't want to see. And then, to top it, you give them the same match in the main event. It's like a shit sandwich, right? You got the bun, and then you got the meat in the middle. But it's still shit on both sides. Nobody wants to eat a shit sandwich. That's essentially what they served up on Monday night. Seth Rollins had a match with Ryback. So Rollins pulled double duty on this show as well. Ended quickly in, what else, their favorite finish. A DQ. I had to think about that for a second, because we do have the distraction roll-up. Maybe that's the second favorite finish now. We get far more DQs than distraction roll-up, so DQ takes the top spot. Speaking of Rollins, he had a really hard night last Monday. You all know what happened. I don't need to rehash it. There really is nothing to say. He was forced to issue an apology on his Twitter account. Triple H made it clear on the NXT conference call, when he was asked about it, that they are considering it a personal matter. So it sounds like Rollins will not be punished, as he shouldn't be. So unless more stuff leaks, he'll be fine. One note on the Rollins thing that I did find amusing. Graham Matthews wrote into me to let me know that a few hours after WWE uploaded its latest countdown show on the network, they pulled it. It was about odd jobs. The Godfather was featured on the list. And before they pulled it, though, Graham saw it, and he said that Rollins was one of the people that was interviewed about The Godfather and his hoes. And he talked about how one hoe wouldn't be enough for him, and that it depends on the quality of the hoe. This is what Seth Rollins said. Talk about an unfortunate choice of words to use this week of all weeks. And sure enough, after they put the episode back up, wouldn't you know it, Rollins' comments were taken out completely. Nowhere to be found. Paige pinned Brie Mode with the Rampage in 316. Stone Cold approves. I noticed what appeared to be new tattoos on Paige's forearms, and I couldn't tell what they were. Many of you pointed out they were not tattoos. There was a British star by the name of Drew McDonald, who passed away after a battle with cancer, 59 years old. Terrible story. He actually helped train Paige, which explains her little tribute. It was Sharpie, not tattoos, on her forearms. She wrote his name on there, rest in peace. He also pushed for her to get her first tryout with WWE, so Drew McDonald played a very big role in her getting to where she is today. Rusev and John Cena had a segment. Rusev and Lana came out. They were talking trash about John Cena. They showed a video package. John Cena came out. He cut a John Cena promo. It ended with a brawl up on the stage. Rusev went after Cena. They brawled for a little bit. Rusev poked Cena in his bad eye, which looked even worse this week. I love that Cena is being phased out of the championship picture right now. He's not part of the title picture. He's been demoted in some ways, you might say. I like that, but what is this nonsense every week now where he comes out? I see all this talk about he's referring to himself as old now, right? He comes out, I'm the old man. You're not going to beat this old man. Old man Cena. The guy's 37 years old. Brock Lesnar is 37 years old. Nobody looks at Brock Lesnar and says to him, hey, old man. Because if they did, they wouldn't have any more birthdays if they said that to Brock Lesnar. I don't get why you would do that. They're much better off, I think, sticking with the story that John Cena mentioned of... he did this in a promo like a week or two ago. He said Triple H and the Authority, they're bringing in all of these young guns from NXT to take his spot. And these guys aren't going to take my spot. I'm not going to allow it. See, to me, that's more believable. Triple H, everybody knows Triple H is running NXT, right? It's his baby. But on television, he's also this heel authority figure, so it would make sense that it's almost like they're Triple H's hired assassins coming in to knock John Cena off his perch. To me, that's a much more viable, believable story than old man Cena. I don't see it. Especially when you've got Kane and Big Show in main events every single week. And you've got 45-year-old Triple H about to wrestle 55-year-old Sting at WrestleMania. But yet we're supposed to believe John Cena is the old man here. I don't buy it. We had another long match this week. Second week in a row with Bray Wyatt and Dolph Ziggler. Same result, too. Wyatt wins with Sister Abigail. They had a hell of a match. Best thing on the entire show, I thought. Bray went all 1987 after the match, lifting up the mats outside the ring. He exposed the concrete. You know, it used to be a big spot back in the day. You don't really see it much anymore. He was threatening to deliver another Sister Abigail to Dolph, this time on the exposed concrete, but the referees implored him not to, and shockingly, Bray Wyatt acquiesced, and he said, okay. And there was no Sister Abigail, so he respects authority, I guess. Paul Heyman cut a promo in the ring with Brock Lesnar standing in the background just chilling. He literally said no words the entire time and just let Paul do the talking. I can't believe they burned one of his appearances on this. This was a complete waste. The New Day came out to crickets, and even the crickets were like, who the fuck are these guys? Absolutely nobody cared. They pinned Goldust off the dreaded distraction roll-up. That was number 6 on the year so far, if you're keeping track. Which you can, by the way, on distractionrollup.com, cheap plug. It would not be the last one we would see on this show. They continue to build dissension between Goldust and Cody when Cody just walked out on him. Dusty Rhodes, they've announced, is going to be on Raw this Monday night to further the storyline between the two of them. So we'll have Stardust, Goldust, and Old Dust in the ring together on Monday night. You may remember the last time we saw Dusty on TV, he ad-libbed during a promo. He put his hand up in front of Stephanie McMahon to kind of shut her down when she was doing the typical let me emasculate all the male baby faces on the show, and supposedly she was very pissed off about it. God forbid we should veer from the script sometimes and make Stephanie McMahon look bad on TV. Then we had Triple H calling out Sting for an answer about whether or not he would agree to talk further with him at Fastlane. Oh, I'm sorry, at WWE Fastlane. Phew, caught myself there. The whole premise of this was ridiculous. I demand you come out to talk to me and tell me whether or not you're going to talk with me again at the pay-per-view. That's basically what this segment was all about. Sting was not there, even though if you watched earlier in the show the way Triple H was talking about him, they were teasing that he would be there and did not deliver. So again, I ask you, is it really all that shocking why hundreds of thousands of people tuned out of the show as the night went on? So Triple H went through this speech about how WWE has been his life for 2 decades now, and others have come and gone, and all of that was nearly taken away by one guy, and that guy is Sting. And Triple H said, I helped crush WCW. I'm sorry. I can't say that with a straight face. I'm sorry. That was funny. So then he went on. He said it took Sting 14 years to finally do something about it, and now I'm calling you out for Fastlane. And the lights started to go out and flicker, and then there were spotlights on different fake Stings in the crowd. Then a blatantly fake Sting came up from behind Triple H in the ring and spooked him, and Triple H did his best Elvis impersonation, did a little Elvis dance before he fell down on the mat. And on the screen, there was a message that appeared, a computerized message on the screen that said, I accept. Presumably, we're supposed to believe that was from Sting. So Sting has accepted his open invitation for Fastlane, and he will be there to have a conversation. About what? I don't know, but they will talk. They will talk at Fastlane. This promo was classic Triple H in so many ways. You know, I've said before, Triple H has always had a tendency when he would cut promos on his opponents to cut them down in such a way, not just in a, oh, he's a heel kind of way, but cut them down in a way that was counterproductive and did very little to put them over. You should want to at least put the other guy over as a worthy opponent so that when you beat them, it actually means something. Triple H telling Booker T that nappy-headed people like him don't belong with people like himself, and they're there to do tricks like spinneroonies, and then proving his point by beating the dude clean. Okay, that doesn't do anything to help Booker T, and it doesn't do anything to make Triple H look any stronger than he was, because you've already told us that this guy is a joke. So who wins in that feud? Nobody really wins. Booker T sure didn't win. He's made a career out of doing that sort of thing. So here we have Triple H as the heel, calling out the babyface vigilante, which is kind of weird in and of itself, that Triple H would be the one calling Sting out, not the other way around. But then he positions himself as this defending hero of WWE. I've been here 20 years. This is my life. You're a coward who's been in hiding for the last 14 years. You know, TNA, I guess, is like witness protection for X-Men eventers. And then he dropped the gem about how I helped crush WCW and it took you 14 years to do something about it. That was the LOL moment of the night for me. You know, it was tough for me to even say that before with a straight face. Triple H had about as much to do with the death of WCW as I did. Even in storyline, think about this, even in storyline, forget the backstage, like, reality aspect of what he said, for which there is no reality, it's not reality-based what he said, but just from a storyline perspective, okay, he wasn't even around for the invasion in 2001. He wasn't even there. He was out. He missed the whole invasion. He had nothing to do with the WCW-ECW stuff in 2001. So I just find the whole thing to be hilarious. And how about Sting? You know, he's really learned to embrace technology, apparently, in those 14 years that he was sitting around doing nothing since WCW shut down. He was eating Cheetos on his couch. Maybe that's why he wears a t-shirt now. Cesaro and Tyson Kidd beat the Usos in a good match, short but good. Tyson Kidd did a really cool-looking flip over the top rope early on in the match that Booker T at least had enough sense to put over, while Shitty the announcer and JBL were too busy giggling about something. By the way, it was 1 year ago this weekend that Cesaro pinned the WWE World Heavyweight Champion Randy Orton, clean as a sheet, in a match on SmackDown. Then he won that Andre Battle Royal at WrestleMania, and then they gave him ambulance sirens for music. And it's been all downhill since. They announced Rikishi as the next inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2015. They had an induction video for him that showed nothing but clips of him shoving his ass in other people's faces. So it looks like they're just inducting the Rikishi character into the Hall of Fame. Actually, I watched this. Do you want to know what they're really inducting here? They're inducting Rikishi's ass into the Hall of Fame. That's what I got out of it by watching this video. They are completely ignoring the rest of his career. This is like Razor Ramon all over again, where they don't acknowledge Scott Hall, the NWO, any of that stuff. They're putting a character in the Hall of Fame. This guy has a pretty impressive body of work that goes back to his days as part of the Samoan SWAT team in the NWA, the Head Shrinkers in WWE. I mean, he had some forgettable gimmicks after that. The Man Who Can Make a Difference and the Sultan, stuff that we'd rather forget. He had his greatest success as a single star as Rikishi. But to just ignore the rest of his career, I don't know. I mean, with Scott Hall, it makes sense, because I am sure that one day they're going to do an NWO induction, and Hall and Nash and Hogan are going to go in. Hogan's going to become the second guy to get two Hall of Fame inductions after Ric Flair did. So it makes sense if they want to save the Scott Hall NWO stuff for another year. But is Rikishi going to go into the Hall of Fame again for something else? This is his one shining moment, and it looks like they're just going to ignore the rest of his career. Maybe not. Maybe when the Hall of Fame rolls around, they'll actually let him talk about all that other stuff. But they didn't let Scott Hall do that, so I would imagine that with him, it'll be all about Rikishi and that run that he had in 2000 and 2001. I think into 2002 even. And I just think it's very odd. You know, if we're now honoring parts of the human anatomy in the WWE Hall of Fame, then it would only make sense for his daughter-in-law to be the one to do the induction. I think the only person in that family with a bigger ass than Rikishi might well be Naomi, and that's not a knock on her at all. That's the ultimate compliment. Sin Cara and Damian Mizdow had a match. The week before, it was Sin Cara and The Miz. We all know what happened there. Distraction roll-up finish, so we could see this coming from a mile away here. Sin Cara beat Mizdow with Miz on commentary by way of yet another distraction roll-up. That makes 7 for the year on this show, and it's only February. Think about that. I actually thought The Miz was great in his role on commentary during this match. I wanted to smack him almost as much as I wanted to smack Kanye West last weekend, so I guess he was doing his job well here in this segment. Dean Ambrose beat Curtis Axel with Dirty Deeds, then Bad News Barrett popped up on the TitanTron, denied him a match for the Intercontinental Championship, which in wrestling means Dean Ambrose will be getting a shot at the Intercontinental title at Fastlane. You wait and see. The main event was the Authority team of Big Show, Kane, Seth Rollins, Jamie Noble, and Joey Mercury, 5-on-2 against Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns. Ryback, Dolph Ziggler, and Eric Rowan had run down later in the match to try to even the odds a little bit and help the babyfaces out. Daniel Bryan had victory well in hand. Roman Reigns blind tagged him in from behind, won with a spear. And so that led to an argument after the match between Reigns and Bryan. Bryan shoved Roman Reigns, who bounced off the ropes and delivered a spear to Daniel Bryan, which elicited lots of boos from the crowd. And I have to say this, you know, there were people who said, oh, I didn't hear boos. There were tons of people doing yes chants. There were people yesing when Roman Reigns did the spear to Daniel Bryan, okay? One black dude starting a yes chant in the front row does not equal most of them were chanting yes. Let's not get carried away here. There was one guy in the front row who clearly was not a Daniel Bryan fan, who was very happy to see Roman Reigns spear him, and he started a yes chant, and a handful of people picked up on it. And somehow, this equates to an entire arena of 10,000 people chanting yes. That did not happen. He got booed. People were not happy when Roman Reigns speared Daniel Bryan. In fact, when they faded to black when the show ended, Roman Reigns was getting boos. The problem here is that it's not as though Daniel Bryan was like over as the biggest babyface in the world either. He got boos. I mean, I'm not going to say he wasn't booed. Over the course of the night, people were not as into him as they have been. People were not as into Roman Reigns as they should be, given his level of push and considering he won the Royal Rumble and really hasn't done anything wrong. That's my problem with the whole storyline. Again, Daniel Bryan comes off more like a bully than anything else. Roman Reigns won the Royal Rumble fair and square. He should be going to WrestleMania to fight for the championship, not fight this guy at Fastlane for the right to keep his title shot. The whole thing is bullshit. And what's happened here is that both guys now were less over than they were coming into this whole thing, and that's exactly what you did not want to happen. But I said it last week. I said that right here on the Sound Up. I said, you wait and see, and I guarantee you that both guys are going to start getting booed, and they're not going to be as over as they were. It took 1 week. It took 1 week to prove me right. And that's what we saw here on this show. And what happens from here, I don't know. I still feel, I know it looks like they're heading for a triple threat at WrestleMania. Maybe they are. It certainly looks that way. They built up Daniel Bryan as this guy's equal. Reigns and Bryan are in all the main events now leading up to this next pay-per-view. For Bryan to all of a sudden, let's say, lose and be relegated to what other match at WrestleMania, I don't even know. Almost wouldn't even make sense at this point. I still feel like they have a plan, and they're not going to break that plan. I mean, I'm not going to do my predictions yet for Fastlane, but I'm still thinking they got Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar penciled in for WrestleMania, and that's their match. I mean, that's just the feeling that I have right now. Maybe something will happen on TV this week that convinces me otherwise. But both guys are in a terrible position right now. I mean, they're in main events. Not that that's a bad position to be in. I just mean in terms of how the crowd is reacting to them, how they're being portrayed on television. They're being portrayed like a bunch of babies. Oh, you bumped into me, so I'm going to lay you out. And then, you know, Bryan will do the same thing to him on Monday night or something, because I know they had them run the gauntlet on SmackDown. I did not see it. I heard it was actually pretty good. They were so depleted. A lot of those guys were overseas on the United Arab Emirates tour. They didn't have a whole full roster of guys. So they had Daniel Bryan or Roman Reigns wrestle practically every team in the company out there for like an hour wrestling on SmackDown. But Bryan didn't really get revenge for what Reigns did to him at the end of the show. The way I look at it is Bryan got exactly what he deserved. He shoved Roman Reigns first. That gave Roman Reigns all the right to go and lay the guy out. I would have done the same thing. So with Roman Reigns, I almost feel bad for the guy. He's done nothing wrong. He's not being a bully. He's not being a prick. He's done nothing wrong. Maybe that's the goal. Maybe the goal on WWE's part is to get Daniel Bryan booed. Let's get the people to turn on Mr. Yes and start chanting no and booing him and turning him into a big baby and making him seem like a bully. And that way, we can get him out of the picture because people won't be as into him anymore, and we can build everything around Roman Reigns. You know what? I don't think that's what's happening here, but would I be shocked? Not really. Let's kill the guy's heat. Fuck him. Fuck everybody else. We have our plans. We're not going to let you ruin our plans again. So we'll just turn him. Maybe they're going to turn him heel. They're going to turn Daniel Bryan heel. Oh, that'd be a great idea. That'd be a fantastic idea, wouldn't it? People were asking me what happened at the end of Raw. Was that a heel turn for Roman Reigns? Because he laid out Daniel Bryan. And I made the comment when I tweeted the person back. I said, that was no more of a turn than Brock Lesnar turning, quote-unquote, turning babyface a few weeks ago before the Royal Rumble. I said at the time, I didn't look at it as a babyface turn. It wasn't. What we saw with Roman Reigns on Raw was not a heel turn. Just like what we saw with the Big Show on SmackDown was not a babyface turn. I don't know why everybody is calling Big Show a babyface. He knocked out Kane. So what? That's called friction within the authority. That's not a babyface turn. I wish people would stop jumping to conclusions. Oh, that was a turn. That was a turn. He's a babyface now. You know, as boring as it is to watch the Big Show, even if he did attempt to turn, who would be into this guy? Who would cheer for this guy at this point? Who would cheer for either one of those guys? Everything right now, the main event picture right now, the main event storyline in WWE, I think the biggest thing, it has no life to it. It just feels boring. It's boring and it's dull, and it shouldn't be that way because we're in the middle of February right now. WrestleMania is only about a month and a half away. This is what should be the hottest period of the year for WWE when you're heading into WrestleMania, and it doesn't have that at all. This, in fact, this might be the coldest period heading into a WrestleMania that we've had in years. In years. So wherever they're headed with this, whatever they're going to do, they better do something fast because they're losing interest in a lot of people, 600,000 less people this week than the week before. And for somebody like me watching this, I'm just like, eh, eh. It's got to be more than just eh. It's got to be something that keeps me engaged and gets me excited for WrestleMania. I shouldn't be more excited for NXT TakeOver in front of 400 people at Full Sail than for WrestleMania in front of 80,000 people, you know, on pay-per-view next month. And right now, I don't know about you, but you know, I'm looking at WrestleMania and I'm thinking to myself, eh. That's the best word I can use to describe my excitement for WrestleMania right now. They've got 6 weeks to try to change my mind and turn things around. Right now, they're not doing a very good job. Thank you guys for taking time out of your day to listen to The Sound Off. I get questions from people asking, how can I support the podcast? Well, the best way to support the show is simple. Just keep listening each and every week. Keep spreading the word about it to friends and family and retweet or share links to the episodes on Twitter and Facebook. But beyond that, you can contribute by making a PayPal donation or by signing up for a free 30-day trial of the Audible.com service. Making a PayPal donation is simple. Just log on to thesolemonster.com and you'll see the PayPal donation box on the right-hand side of the page. Enter whatever amount you'd like and click the Make a Donation button. That's it. Or sign up for a free Audible trial by entering our custom URL, audibletrial.com/solemonster. From there, you can sign up free for 30 days, which helps us out. You get one free audiobook as part of your trial that you get to keep no matter what. You can browse through their library of over 150,000 titles. Listen to your books at home, on the commute to work, at the gym, whenever, wherever. Sign up at audibletrial.com/solemonster or visit thesolemonster.com to make a donation right now. And thank you for supporting The Sound Off. Impact Wrestling. I missed TNA last week, although I was at the show, so I didn't really have to watch it. But this was their first show taped on the European tour. This week they were in Glasgow, Scotland. Hot crowd. I watched the Impact Unlocked edition on Saturday morning with the little Mike Tenay pop-up facts because I wanted to see his sit-down interview with Kurt Angle. about the Foxcatcher movie. I heard a lot of good things about the movie and the interview that Tanay did with Angle. Angle, of course, was trained by, very close with David Schultz, who was murdered by John DuPont. If you don't know the story, you can look it up or go see the movie. I've heard nothing but raves about the movie and the performances by Steve Carell and Channing Tatum, Mark Ruffalo. So Kirk gave his thoughts on the movie. He was very impressed. He didn't think it was 100% accurate, but he said the movie was mostly accurate. Talked about Dave Schultz and Foxcatcher, the Foxcatcher camp, and it was fascinating stuff to listen to Kirk talk about it. So I would say that it's worth trying to track down the interview with Tanay if you want to hear Angle's thoughts about that. I'm sure Kurt's done other interviews as well. So Bobby Roode and Austin Aries had the first match of the show. There was an opening talking segment, lots of talking. I'm so beyond talking this week. I'm on like a wrestling high this week after watching NXT and Lucha Underground, so much great wrestling. I have no tolerance for talking this week. So the first match was Bobby Roode and Austin Aries. They had a good match. Aries tapped out to the crossface. After the match, Roode got on the microphone and said, "This is professional wrestling," and he praised Austin Aries as one of the best opponents that he's ever been in the ring with. Aries then smacked Roode across the face for being condescending. Oh, wait, no, that was what I was hoping he would do. Instead, he shook Roode's hand and left. Remember when these two were a heel tag team? I miss that. Roode stayed in the ring, talked about wanting to challenge for the World Heavyweight title when Eric Young ran out from the crowd, attacked him, laid him out with a pile driver. Roode took a very RVD-esque bump on the pile driver. When they came back from break, we saw the referees helping Bobby Roode up the aisleway to the back when Eric Young ran back out and gave Roode another pile driver, this one on top of the ramp. This got good heat from the fans in Glasgow. They were not happy to see Eric Young beat up Bobby Roode. They were very unhappy about that. It looked like an injury angle to keep Roode out for a while. I didn't read the taping results, so I don't know if he's back next week on the show or what, but this certainly looked like an injury angle to me. Al Snow was in the ring. Yes, Al Snow just happened to be in the ring, cutting a promo on TNA Impact. He talked about this guy, Grado, who was eliminated from British Boot Camp 2. I've seen pictures of Grado. I'm not familiar with Grado. In fact, I had only seen pictures of him. So when Grado came out and the first time he spoke, I was floored. I thought this guy looked like he was Latin or Mexican or something. I was expecting him to have like a Spanish, you know, accent or something. And instead, he's got, I don't know, I don't even know what accent it was. It was some kind of European accent. I don't want to say the wrong accent and then offend people because I said it was the right, attributed his accent to the wrong country in the UK. He had a UK accent, let's put it that way. And the people were into him. They loved Grado. They were chanting his name. Al Snow apparently does not like the guy very much, wants him out of wrestling. I guess Grado, like I said, had been eliminated from British Boot Camp, and maybe there was some heat on the show with him and Al Snow. I didn't see the show, so I wouldn't know. So Al Snow sees his mother in the crowd, and he goes outside to Grado's mom and says, "You should be ashamed of your son." And she slapped Al a few times. Grado shoved him away from his mother, and Al Snow retreated and said, "I'll wrestle you next week. If you can beat me, I'll shake your hand and show you respect. Otherwise, you don't deserve my respect." I thought Al Snow was actually really good here. His voice has gotten a lot deeper. I don't know if that's just, you know, with age or what that's from. He didn't sound like Al Snow, but it definitely was Al Snow. And he looked like he was in amazing shape, too. So that match was set up for next week. We then had EC3 and Tyrus beating Rockstar Spud, Mandrews, and Jeremy Borash in a handicap match when EC3 pinned Spud. EC3 is wearing a brace on his arm because he's still not healed from his torn bicep. He wallowed Spud with it before the finish, got the pin. After the match, EC3 tried to shave Spud's head when the lights went out. When they came back on, the baby faces were gone. And in the ring was Tyrus and EC3. They were standing in like a fighting position. In between them was Ken Anderson, who was trying to blend in. And then they realized that Ken Anderson was in the ring with them, and Anderson went and beat up Tyrus, and he went to beat up EC3, but he got the hell out of there. Awesome Kong beat Madison Rayne very quickly with the implant buster. Her back must really be hurting her because she hasn't done anything since she came back. She has not looked good at all. So I don't know if she's going to need surgery on her back or what the deal is. If her back is that bad off, then you know what? You shouldn't have brought her back. That's all I have to say. Matt Hardy came out to give an update on his brother. Yep. Still a convicted felon. So there's your update. That's why he's not on the UK tour. James Storm and his Revolution pals came out, threatened to put Matt in the same hospital room with Jeff. Matt Hardy then did what any smart babyface would do when confronted by 5-1 odds. He decked James Storm, which naturally led to him getting his ass kicked. The Wolves came out to make the save. Main event was MVP and Samoa Joe against Kurt Angle and Bobby Lashley. MVP and Samoa Joe get the win. Some faulty communication between Angle and Lashley led to MVP pinning Lashley with a roll-up. Angle and Lashley got in one another's face after the match. And that was Impact. Rude and Aries is worth watching. It's not a blowaway match. It's not the best match I've ever seen them have. But it's good. The show has, you know, a noticeable higher level of energy, obviously, when they're in the UK. They have a more energetic vibe to it because they're in front of those UK crowds that are starved for action. They go on like one tour all year. Moving TNA's operations to the UK is not the answer. I've talked about that before, and I've given all the reasons why that would not work. But when they go over there, I got to give them credit. The UK crowds make TNA feel like an important product, even when it's not. So, well done, UK. That brings us to Lucha Underground, episode 14 this week. Alberto El Patron is in the company. We had that little cliffhanger the week before where Alberto made his debut on TV. He popped into Dario Cueto's office. The show this week opened with him in Cueto's office, asking him for the opportunity to go out there and speak his mind. So it's open mic night for Alberto El Patron. That would come later on in the show. We open with Phoenix and Argenis. Really fun match. Katrina got in the ring when the match was over. She licked Argenis' face, which seemed to spook Phoenix a bit. If you remember the week before, there had been a pre-tape segment where Phoenix was kickboxing backstage, and Katrina came over. Katrina, of course, the valet of Mil Muertes. And she ended up kissing Phoenix and said to Phoenix, "Don't let him know that I was here, because if he finds out, basically, we're both dead." So she is courting Phoenix. I don't know if it's maybe part of a ruse. I don't know what's going on here. But he was freaked out. We then got a pair of pre-taped videos, which Lucha Underground does better than any other promotion in America right now. In fact, I would say, as great as the in-ring action is, the real strong point of this product are these very polished, highly produced pre-taped segments that they do. It just looks awesome. It really does. And we had two of them here. The first one, Mil Muertes, was predictably not happy with Katrina licking another man's face. He grabbed her by the throat, lifting her off her feet, mind you, and told her that he didn't need anything. I forgot what she had said to him, but he was like, "I don't need anything." And then he put her back down and walked off. And as he's walking off in the hallway, he runs into Chavo Guerrero, whose ass he proceeded to kick, because that's what Mil Muertes does. That's how he rolls. He beat the shit out of Chavo and basically said next week he would have to pay his debt, so I guess that's a match for next week. So in the next vignette, we had Big Rick. We didn't see him at first. We heard Big Rick's voice. We haven't seen him in a few weeks. Last we saw of him, he was having a lit cigar put out in his eye, which I'm sure is no fun. And so he's sitting in a confessional in a church asking for forgiveness as he is about to commit a great sin by basically killing the three dudes who turned on him, that being Cortez, Castro, Mr. Cisco, and Bale. They're in for some bad times. And then to end the segment, Big Rick lit up a cigar. Can you light up a cigar in confessional? Is that allowed? I would think not. But he lit up a cigar. We got a glimpse of him with an eye patch on. He looked badass. I hope he keeps the eye patch. I think it adds a lot of, I don't know, makes him more intimidating that way. He's like a jacked up black version of Snake Plissken. That's a dude you don't want to fuck with. Johnny Mundo beat Son of Havoc in a match that, had this match taken place any other week, would have easily been the match of the week. In the same week as NXT TakeOver, I can't go that far. But this was damn good. A very, very good match. Starship Pain by Mundo for the win. After the match, King Cuerno attacked Mundo, laid him out with the thrill of the hunt. Pentagon Jr. beat Ricky Mandel by submission with an armbar, just as he did last week to poor Famous B. We didn't get an update, by the way, on Famous B's condition, unless I missed it. After this match, he did the same thing. He snapped Ricky Mandel's arm, wrenching back on the armbar. Am I the only one who is legitimately freaked out when I see him do this? I feel like I have this actual feeling of fear of Pentagon when I see this guy come out. This feeling of dread, like something bad's going to happen. Some dude's going to get his arm broken. And then they do it, and it just, I don't know, makes me very queasy. So I guess it's working. He then got on the microphone in Spanish. He said that he told his master, without identifying who this master is, that he had just given him another sacrifice. Main event segment was Alberto El Patron out for a promo. He came out wearing the, holding the AAA title. Came out to a massive reaction. He came off more like a superstar here than his entire run in WWE. He said he was disrespected in WWE without actually saying the initials. And that's why he left there. He said that in November, he became the first person to hold every major world title in North America when he captured the AAA world title. Poor TNA. He was on a roll here. He was talking about not being held back in Lucha Underground because of the color of your skin and all that kind of stuff when he was suddenly attacked from behind with a leather strap by Tejano, the man he beat to win the AAA World Heavyweight title down in Mexico. And Tejano left Del Rio laying to end the show. So they're bringing their feud from AAA up to Lucha Underground. We now have two men walking around with world titles here. I guess Cage has the pieces of the Lucha Underground title in his possession, but Prince Puma is the champion. I don't know that that does Prince Puma any favors if he's supposed to be the top guy in the company that they're building around, but I have to say, Alberto was awesome here. He bored me to tears in WWE, but if we see and hear more of this every single week, I'll change my tune pretty quick on the guy. He was actually quite great. Like I said, came off as a total superstar here in this segment. It just makes you wonder, how many guys on that WWE roster could be true breakout stars if they were allowed to be? You know, I read the story this week about the discontent in WWE right now on the main roster with all the praise that's being heaped on the NXT crew and how they know they're, you know, the guys on the main roster know that they're every bit as good as those guys are, but the NXT roster is given more time to wrestle and to show their stuff. And it's frustrating a lot of the guys on the main roster. I believe that. Absolutely. It's like once you're able to step outside that bubble, even to go to NXT, look what it did for Tyson Kidd. Or to leave the company altogether, look at Alberto. Look at Drew Galloway. It's like these guys reinvent themselves and they're a whole new person. It's really, I think more than anything else, it's an indictment on how creatively stifling it is right now in WWE. And that's on Vince McMahon. That's on one guy. He could justify it by throwing the word sponsors out there all he wants. Well, we have sponsors. We can't just have anybody going out there saying whatever they want to. So they throw this whole sponsor nonsense out there, but it's a cop-out. It's a cop-out excuse. Giving your guys a little more freedom does not mean that they're going to go out there and do crotch chops and throw up middle fingers and women are going to go out there and have to walk around in bikinis and evening gowns. Okay, you can make your product better and still keep it sponsor-friendly. It would not take a whole lot of effort. So that's one of the things that really struck me watching this, you know, with Del Rio and how many other guys on that WWE roster right now. It's like they're prisoners. You know, it's like they're stuck in this purgatory with no way out, and you got to feel sorry for them. I mean, to some extent, they're making a living. Some of them are making really good money. They're doing what they love to do, but you still have to feel sorry for those guys because they're not realizing their full potential, and it's not their fault. Let's get to the mailbag. If you have questions, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in, or else your letter may not be used. Richard, in Toronto, with Cena versus Rusev at Fastlane officially for the United States Championship, and with the Ambrose-Barrett feud for the Intercontinental title, what do you think of John Cena winning the U.S. title and Dean Ambrose winning the Intercontinental title, then booking Ambrose versus Cena at WrestleMania 31 in a title versus title unification match? Obviously, the idea here would be that Ambrose would go over Cena clean at Mania and unify both belts. I think this does a great job of elevating Dean Ambrose back to prominence and allows him to be the workhorse champion moving forward with a lot of talent to work with now that there is only one secondary championship as opposed to two. I like the idea, actually. I like that idea a lot, but that also means that John Cena then beats Rusev at Fastlane, which I'm not a fan of. I do not want to see John Cena beat Rusev at Fastlane. So I might actually prefer it if they give Rusev, let's say, the cheap win. He's not going to beat Cena clean. He's not tapping Cena out in the accolade. We know that. I would prefer it if they give Rusev the win, the cheap win over Cena, let him keep the title, have Ambrose beat Barrett, and do the unification match of WrestleMania with Ambrose and Rusev. And have Ambrose get to not only unify the titles, but he gets to end the streak. To do both of those things, I think, at WrestleMania would be a great way to erase a lot of the damage that's been done to Dean Ambrose over the last several months. And there's been damage done. I mean, don't fool yourself into thinking that Dean Ambrose hasn't cooled off an unbelievable amount from where he was 3 or 4 months ago, because he has. And he's not a lost cause or anything like that. I think that would be a way to really kind of boost him back up into a high-profile position in the company. You can also then have Dolph Ziggler cost John Cena the match at Fastlane. If you're looking for a way, okay, how does Rusev get that cheap win over Cena? That might be your in. That might be your way. You have Ziggler cost him the match. It goes back to the story that they should have pushed when he came back from being fired of holding Cena responsible for bringing back the Authority and costing Ziggler his job. And that then sets up John Cena versus Dolph Ziggler for WrestleMania, if the rumors are true, and Daniel Bryan might possibly be added to the main event. There's not going to be a Bryan-Ziggler match after all, which Bryan and Ziggler both were pushing on social media for weeks. If that's not going to happen, all of a sudden Dolph Ziggler gets screwed over again. He's a man without a cause on this show. Well, I can't think of a bigger match for him then, if not against Bryan, than against John Cena. And that gives Cena and Ziggler something to do while keeping Cena and Rusev away from each other. Let them have their one match and then just move on. I like that idea better. But I think you're in the right direction here. The idea of unifying those two titles, I'm absolutely in favor of. There's no need for two secondary titles on the roster. And it helps Dean Ambrose, and it gives Ziggler a match with Cena at WrestleMania. It gives him something big on the card. Scott from Rock Hill, South Carolina. The moment I lost respect for Hulk Hogan was in 1993 after a match he had with the Great Muta in Japan. It was WWE Champion against IWGP Champion, and Hogan won the match. In the post-match interview, he said he felt the WWE title was a toy compared to the IWGP Championship, and that Muta's title was the real deal. Even at the age of 13, I felt that Hogan had disrespected the company that he worked for and its own championship. Was there ever a time that you, as a Hogan fan, questioned being a fan of his? Yeah, the Royal Rumble, 1992. For all the years that he went around as a babyface in WWF back then, I think back to that Rumble match and Sid dumping him out of the ring at the finish and Hogan freaking out, and Sid looks down at Hogan and says, "It's every man for himself, big boy," and goes to turn around to go after Flair, and Hogan grabs his leg. And Hogan then has to help Flair, the heel that he had been feuding with, dump Sid, the babyface, out of the ring. Why? Because Hulk Hogan didn't win the match, because he didn't get his way, because he's a crybaby, and he's a sore loser. It's hard to cheer for somebody like that. And I remember that interview that you talked about, because I actually talked about it on the Sound Off before. He referred to the WWF title that he held at that time, and actually had in front of him at the press conference. He referred to it as a trinket. Hell of a way to refer to your world title. Speaking of Sid, this comes from Jay in Chicago. I would like to know your thoughts on Sid Vicious as a performer and as a WWE champion during the Attitude Era. I was always a fan of Sid during that period when he was the champion. I mean, Sid was never like a great wrestler ever at all, not even close. But, you know, for a big guy like that, 6'9", 313... you know, he did what he had to do. He was more mobile. I'll give him that. He was more mobile than most big guys were at that time. But again, he wasn't a great wrestler, but he did what he had to do. You know, he went in there. He had a big boot. He had a choke slam. He had a power bomb. I talked about this earlier with Owens when I went through the NXT stuff. I'm a huge power bomb mark. I love the power bomb. I think we need more power bombs. And so I love the finish. And I loved his intensity. You know, that's something that I think we're missing in wrestling these days. People can talk crap about Sid all they want to, and it would probably be well-deserved. He's also, you know, got a reputation for not being reliable and no-showing events, especially indie shows. And that's why he was in and out of WWE and WCW so often. He was never there for like 5 straight years. Why? Because there was always some problem with Sid. And they would fire him, or he would quit, or he failed a drug test like he did in 92. There was always something with this guy, but they always brought him back. Why do you think they would bring him back? They obviously saw something in the guy. I remember when they brought him in 96. The Ultimate Warrior got fired. He got shit-canned. And they needed a replacement for him to team up with Shawn Michaels and Ahmed Johnson. They were the big baby faces at the time. And they brought back Sid, who either quit or was fired the year before. They brought back Sid. And Sid was over like gangbusters. I mean, some of those crowds, I remember there was a match on pay-per-view with him and Vader. I think it was a number one contenders match on the October pay-per-view where they had the first Buried Alive match. And the people were going nuts for this guy. People loved Sid. And he brought a level of intensity that you just don't see it in wrestling now. Find me somebody on the main roster right now who is as intense as Psycho Sid. The guy was nuts, but he was intense. I like that. I wish more guys were intense like that. Everyone now is just so vanilla. It's like they're afraid to come out of their shell. And Sid's promos were high comedy. I mean, you talk about entertainment. You know, WWE loves to talk about how we're here to entertain you. I don't know about you guys. When I watch 95% of the promos on a given episode of Monday Night Raw, I don't find them very entertaining. If you transplanted Psycho Sid from 1995 or 1996 to modern-day WWE, and you put a microphone in his hand, I wouldn't be able to turn away from the TV. I mean, it would probably be, it wouldn't make any sense, but I would be glued to the TV. So I consider myself a Psycho Sid fan. Alexandru says, what do you think of Kane's legacy? What do you think it will be? While he could have been regarded as one of the best big men ever, he may instead be remembered as the has-been who long overstayed his welcome on these last few years, which have done him no favors. I was a Kane fan, but now I no longer want to see him because he has turned into a sad joke. Well, that may be true, but I still think Kane is going to go down as one of the best big men of all time. I can't say the best. I think I consider Vader to be the best big man in wrestling I ever saw. Undertaker obviously would be up there. Kane would be right there with him. I mean, say what you want to about the guy. The guy's been wrestling well over 20 years. A lot of those 20 years have been in WWE. He's a big guy. What's the first thing to go on big guys, right? Their knees. And to his credit, Kane, after all these years, and he's 45, 47, maybe 48, he's somewhere in that range. He's not getting any younger. He goes out there, he works a full-time schedule, he does the house shows, he does all the TV shows. You know, it's not his fault that he's in main events every single week. I mean, that's more on Vince and the people who are writing the damn show. I'm sure if they wrote Kane into some mid-card feud, he'd be in a mid-card feud. I don't see Kane politicking his way into the main event. I don't think we can hold Kane the person responsible for this shit that we see on television every week. Now, you know, corporate Kane coming out wearing slacks is not exactly going to light the world on fire, and it's not doing his character any favors. But I've said this before. The day will come where they put a mask back on him, and that may be the only thing that could get people to care about Kane again. There are a lot of Kane fans out there. You would be very surprised by how many Kane fans are out there, including people who would love to see him get one more run with the belt. Once the shitty corporate Kane character goes away, he'll be fine. People are going to look back on Kane. They're going to look back on Monster Kane back in the day with the mask, chokeslamming dudes with one arm. They're going to think back to Kane with the towel on his head in 03, you know, clipping jumper cables to Shane McMahon's balls. Some people may look back fondly on the Team Hell No stuff with Daniel Bryan. That was entertaining enough, and Dr. Shelby and all that kind of crap. So when you look back on Kane's career, he had a great career. He had a great deal of success over a very long period of time. I don't think any stupid gimmick they may stick him in now is going to kill his legacy, whatever legacy that is. You know, he's an instant Hall of Famer when he hangs it up, as he should be. He'll be fine. Brian from Centerville, Indiana. I continue to hear in interviews from Vince McMahon about how Ted Turner tried to kill his company in the 1990s. Yet during the glorious 1980s, McMahon sent employees to the territories once a year to scout talent to steal, put the first Survivor Series against Starrcade in 87, and forced all but two cable systems to make a choice on which to carry, and even asked Harley Race to no-show Starrcade 83, which was outlined in Ric Flair's book. Is there some sort of difference between the tactics of Ted Turner and Vince McMahon, or is this just simple hypocrisy? It's just hypocrisy. I mean, that's really all it is. You know, it's okay for me to do it, but when it happens to me, it's not fair. It's like, he's got more money than me. He's got an open checkbook. That's not fair. That'd be like saying you and I are going to race, but I know that you're faster than me, and so how about you give me a 10-second head start, because otherwise I can't compete with you. I can't compete with your speed, and that's not fair. That's ridiculous, right? You would look me in the face and go, fuck you, and you would make me eat your dust. That's what would happen. I mean, if you knew half the shit that this guy did in the 80s, believe me, you would have no sympathy whatsoever for Vince McMahon, because Ted Turner cracked open his checkbook and maybe dedicated 5 minutes of his life every year to thinking about pro wrestling in the 90s. Vince McMahon is nobody that you need to feel sorry for. Muhammad in Bahrain, after playing the Randy Orton and Christian rivalry in WWE 2K15's showcase mode, I realized I really liked that feud, and it made SmackDown and the World Heavyweight title more interesting. What made this rivalry so awesome, and do you think Christian is Randy Orton's best opponent ever? I think Christian may well be Randy Orton's best opponent ever. It's not John Cena, despite what WWE would tell you. It may well be Christian. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head that consistently had awesome matches like that with Randy Orton. I think what made the feud so awesome was they had a chemistry in the ring together that people just, I think, didn't expect. You know, they had that first match, which upset a lot of people, right after Christian won the world title. They took it right off of him. And then they proceeded, this was in 2011, they proceeded to have a whole series of matches. And a lot of times WWE will do that, where they'll take two guys, put them in a feud. They'll have match after match after match. I mean, how many times do we see Del Rio and Sheamus? How many times do we see Sheamus and Dolph Ziggler? How many brogue kicks can one guy take? But what made that feud okay, and why it didn't bother me that we had so many matches between them, I mean, at the end it got a little old, but it didn't bother me as much because every time those guys had a match, it was something different. Like, the finish was different, the story was different, and they had a great kick-ass match. So it was just, it was fantastic to be able to sit back and watch those two guys do what they do best. It was my feud of the year in 2011 for good reason. So I'm with you. I think it was an awesome feud, and I think that it worked so well because those two guys had a chemistry in the ring together where they just produced great frickin' matches. And if you go out there and you give people great frickin' matches, that's all you need to do. That's how you win people over. This comes from Steve Matthews. I was reading up on the Candido Cup that TNA did a while back, and it got me thinking, what if there was a tournament where the main roster wrestlers teamed up with the NXT rookies, and with the winning team earning a pro a title shot, and the NXT rookie a main roster contract? This plays off the original concept of NXT. What do you think? I think in theory it's a nice idea. We'd have to be fleshed out a little bit better than that, I think. But right now, I don't want to see it. It wouldn't work right now. And just the idea, you know, they're going to be calling up a lot of guys hopefully soon from NXT, because, like I said earlier, there are guys down there that have no business being down there. So if you did something like that, let's say, you know, one of the NXT guys, Sami Zayn, okay, his team wins and so he gets a contract. What does it really mean if, let's say, 2 or 3 weeks later we start seeing vignettes on television promoting the upcoming debut of Kevin Owens or the upcoming debut of Adrian Neville, right? I don't know. It just, to me, it doesn't really mean much. And the idea of it is not a bad one. It's not a bad idea. It does kind of bring me back to that first season of NXT, and not in a good way. I wouldn't want to go back to that. But there may be something there. Maybe somebody listening to this can kind of tweak the idea and come up with a better way to go about doing it. But just to do something like that right now, I think kind of what bothers me about it maybe is the idea that you could take a guy like a Sami Zayn or a Finn Balor or a Hideo Itami, and the way that Vince McMahon and WWE would book it, they're not going to book those two guys as equals. So the idea of having, let's say, Finn Balor on a team with, maybe not The Miz like they did with Bryan, but maybe it's like Finn Balor and, I don't even know, maybe Randy Orton or something like that. Randy Orton obviously is a much more accomplished star. He's a bigger star. He's a multiple-time world champion. But it would bother me to see them on commentary and on television position Finn Balor as this up-and-coming rookie. Hey, Rook, you know, you better know your place, Rook. And position him at such a lower level than a Randy Orton, it just would ring hollow to me. I don't want to see those guys made out to be rookies, because a lot of them are not rookies. A lot of them have been doing this for longer than Randy Orton has been doing this. And I know Vince McMahon's way of thinking on shit like this and the way they would position it would do these other guys no favors. I mean, it would make them look like just a bunch of nobodies, and I don't want to see that happen. Ashley Tracy, what do you think of the 1996 Royal Rumble, specifically Shawn Michaels being eliminated by Vader, but it not counting in Royal Rumble since they have not enforced this rule? Well, that just goes to show you that they make up the rules as they go along, right? We've talked about this before. Guys that eliminated themselves over the top rope, but oh, it didn't count. But then years later, it's okay to eliminate yourself over the top rope like Mil Máscaras did in 97. They make shit up as they go along. The 96 Rumble, I remember, I enjoyed it. It is not one of my favorite Rumbles. I enjoyed it, though. It wasn't a bad Rumble match. I think I liked it better than 95, which was the first one that Shawn won. I remember Shawn's superkick missing by a mile when he kicked Diesel out of the ring to end the match. He kind of kicked Diesel in the shoulder, and Diesel sold it and went flying out over the top. I remember Shawn Michaels pulling his pants down and mooning the crowd when the match was over. I remember that. That's a hard vision to get out of your head. And thinking that, I like the tease they did. They teased that Diesel was going to attack him from behind after they shook hands, and he didn't. Although Diesel did end up turning on Shawn, just they waited a little longer on it. That was also the year that Diesel came out, I think, during the main event, right? With Bret and Undertaker. Undertaker was wearing his Phantom of the Opera mask because his face, his orbital bone, had been crushed by Mabel, legit, a few months earlier. And at the end of that match, I know Undertaker had Bret beat for the title. Diesel came in, interfered, and then he flipped off the Undertaker. And that really, you know, now that I think about it, that was the first sign there of attitude. I don't want to say that was what started the Attitude Era, that one little moment there, but that was when we really started to see shades of what would come later on in the Attitude Era. When Diesel turned on Bret at the end of their match at Survivor Series in 95, and he came out on Raw the next night, and Nash does deserve credit for this. Whether long-term it was a good or a bad thing for wrestling, I don't know, but he was the first guy that really came out and did the cool heel character. And then you fast forward a couple of years, and everybody's doing the cool heel. The whole NWO was full of nothing but cool heels. Steve Austin, to some extent, was a cool heel, or maybe like a tweener that the people just took to. But Diesel was the first guy, at least in any of the major promotions, that I can remember doing a character like that. And I remember him flipping off The Undertaker at the end of the Rumble in 96. And it was still a very kid-friendly product at that time, so that was kind of shocking. That they would have allowed him to go out there and do something like that. Joshua from Franklin, Virginia, I was hoping to get your thoughts on the career of JBL and how you feel his place in wrestling history will be viewed. Were you a fan of JBL's? Absolutely. Absolutely. I wouldn't have written for his website if I wasn't, right? I liked JBL when he adopted the cowboy character, you know, the rich guy character. It was kind of out of left field. Because I remember he went from being the APA version of JBL, and literally the next week he walked out on SmackDown wearing a suit and a cowboy hat, and had a copy of his book in his hand, How to Make More Money Now, and he was doing a completely different character than anything we had ever seen him do before. And the reason they did that was they needed stars. That was when they had the brand split in effect. Eddie Guerrero was the WWE champion. Kurt Angle may have gotten hurt again, so he was going to be out. And they needed somebody. That's the only reason JBL got that push. And they picked him. And to his credit, I think he hit it out of the ballpark. I thought he did a home run. He did, you know, the best he could with it. He made it work. He was one of those few heels that you truly hated at the time and wanted to see him get his ass kicked. There was really nothing likable or redeeming about him. And it had to be hard for him to do because everybody loved the APA. They went out there, they drank beer, they kicked people's ass. He had to shed all of that and give people a reason to really hate him, and he did. And Eddie Guerrero was friends with him, and Eddie wanted to see him do well and succeed, and he was very fortunate, JBL was, to be able to work with Eddie. I think Eddie Guerrero had a lot to do with JBL getting that character over, and he went on to hold the title for like 8 or 9 months. I will not look at JBL as a main eventer when I look back on his career. He'll always be more of like an upper mid-card guy to me. He had a great run, but I can't look at JBL's body of work and say, you know, he will go down to me as a main eventer. I don't know that I quite see him on that level. But I like the character. You know, I was a fan of the character. I mean, all the stuff he did before then, I could go either way on. I mean, I liked the APA, but it wasn't like a major act. And before that, he was doing Justin Hawk Bradshaw, and he was part of the New Blackjacks. I didn't give two shits about the guy back then. Only when he was allowed to finally start showing off his real personality and his sense of humor, did I look at the guy and go, huh, all right, this guy's kind of cool. It's funny how that works, right? When you let guys be more like themselves and come out of their shell, it's incredible how that works. That's how I view his place in wrestling. He has his place. He had a great run on the SmackDown brand. But I can't really say that I look at him, like when he goes into the Hall of Fame one day, which I'm sure he will. I mean, they're putting Rikishi in. You can't tell me JBL doesn't deserve to be in there. He'll get in one day, and rightfully so. But I don't really look at him as being this like all-time great main eventer. He fell short of that to me. He's a level or two below that. But in terms of getting heel heat and getting people to hate him, at that time, I don't think there was anybody better during that period. That was probably at the tail end of Triple H's reign of terror on Raw. Maybe you could say Triple H. He was a great heel. But I think JBL deserves a lot of credit for taking that character and making it his own and making it work. Last question here. Matt from Connecticut. What are your top three favorite TV shows right now? Let's see. Top three favorite TV shows right now. Number one, easy, is The Walking Dead. Yeah, there's still people out there who say, oh, I don't know how you can watch that. The writing is so terrible. I don't know what show these people are watching. I think the writing is fine. The Walking Dead, number one. Shark Tank, number two. I am in love with Shark Tank. I love that show. Shark Tank, for those of you who don't know, airs on ABC here in the States. It's a panel of investors. Self-made millionaires, billionaires. Mark Cuban, the guy who owns the Dallas Mavericks, he's one of them. There's a bunch of other people. They will negotiate with other entrepreneurs, amateur entrepreneurs who have a product idea, they just started a business, they need an investment, and they come on, and it's all legit, and it's legit negotiations that go on camera, and it's a great show. I love it. I love Shark Tank. So that's probably number two. Number three, I would say NXT. I really do. I love NXT more than any other wrestling show I watch right now. Lucha Underground's right behind it. Some weeks it's better, but that would be my top three. Walking Dead, Shark Tank, and NXT. Better Call Saul. We're only two episodes into Better Call Saul, so it's too early for me to really put that in my top three. Speaking of which, you know, The Walking Dead, I didn't mention this last week. The Walking Dead is back on the air. It was back last weekend. Better Call Saul premiered. I thought both were great. I'm not going to give away any spoilers, obviously, but two great shows that I'm very happy to have back on the air. I really don't watch a lot of television aside from wrestling. I mean, when you take the wrestling out of it, I was thinking about this, and I have recommendations from people. Oh, you got to watch House of Cards on Netflix. Oh, you got to watch True Detective. True Detective, the first season, I want to watch that. I know it's on HBO Go. I'm planning on getting to that at some point. I see these car commercials with Matthew McConaughey. I have no fucking idea what's going on. I have people telling me, oh, it's the character that he played on the show. I'm like, oh, okay. So I have shows, like I have a list of things I have to get to, and I just never have time. So I don't really watch that much television, so I make sure that the stuff I do watch, like I'm really into it. And The Walking Dead, I thought that the most recent season was probably the strongest one yet. I think people are nuts if they think that this show doesn't have good writing and it's terrible. How can you watch that? I think you're out of your mind. I think it's fantastic. And what I've seen so far from Better Call Saul, again, I'm not giving anything away here. I was watching that first episode. You know, it's an origin episode, so it's going to go a little slower. It felt like there wasn't a whole lot going on. And then the ending happened, and it's like, ah, all right, I'm sorry I doubted you, you know. And then we're kind of off to the races at that point. You don't have to have seen Breaking Bad, I think, to enjoy Better Call Saul, but it helps. It helps a lot. And plus, Breaking Bad is probably the best television show of all time. It's right up there with The Shield, in my opinion, as if not the best TV show, certainly one of the best TV shows. I would advise you to watch Breaking Bad no matter what, whether you watch Better Call Saul or not. But Better Call Saul is a spinoff with one of the characters from Breaking Bad, for those who don't know. And it's a great show. I've watched the first two episodes so far, and I'm enjoying it. So highly recommend, if you have not watched it yet, definitely check those out. Before we wrap up, I actually do have a sad tweet this week, and this comes from an unfortunate exchange on Twitter involving a fake Stephanie McMahon account and Ashley Massaro, former WWE diva and Playboy cover girl, Ashley Massaro. Ashley received a tweet. She was tagged in a tweet from a phony Stephanie McMahon Twitter account that looked legit at first glance, but it was obvious it was a fake. And the phony Stephanie McMahon said, the WWE wants to invite you to Raw this coming Monday, only on USA and the WWE Network. Actually, that doesn't make any sense. What's your answer? And Ashley, unfortunately, fell for it. And she tweeted back at Stephanie, the fake Stephanie, all in caps, very excited. The answer is yes, yes, yes. So happy right now. Thanks, at WWE Universe. And you too, Steph. And everyone else too. Awesome. And then she realized what happened. She took the tweet down a few minutes later and she posted another one that said, haha, I was wondering why Carano didn't just call me, LOL. Well, you never know. Very funny fake account. That was really awful. Whoever did that, you know, it's just terrible. I don't know what else to say. It's definitely the definition of a sad tweet. And that's why it won this week's Sad Tweet. Poor Ashley Massaro. If you have a recommendation for a sad tweet, as always, feel free to tweet it at me, at Solomonster on Twitter, and I might actually use it on the show. So follow me on there anyway, at Solomonster. I'll be live tweeting during Raw this Monday night, as always. And you can also hit up the Facebook profile page, facebook.com/TheSolomonster is my official profile page. We have a fan page that you can like. We have a private discussion group that you can only get access to if you first like the fan page. They kind of go hand in hand. So you can find us on there. YouTube.com/TheSolomonster is the direct link to our YouTube channel with bonus audio content on there, sound off extras, some mailbags. We have the Royal Rumble review that's up there as well. And looks like TV Tracks, for those of you who are not aware, is going to be taking a little bit of a break. So you may see more clips from each of the episodes going up on our own channel so we can keep, people looking for the clips on YouTube. If they go to the other channel, they may not see anything current, so maybe they'll find clips on our own channel. So you may see more of that going on. He's been a huge supporter of the show. I mean, if he wants to take some time off, by all means, he's a huge fan of the podcast, and he has helped bring in so many new listeners. I mean, a lot of you guys listening right now probably first heard of the Sound Off through Tracks and through a clip that he posted on his channel. So I can't thank him enough for all of his support. If you want to make a PayPal donation, you can do so on thesolomonster.com. Like I said earlier, that is the easiest, best way to show your support for the show, the most direct way. You can go on over there and make a donation. You can use our Audible link to get your free copy of the new Shawn Michaels book. Just plug in audibletrial.com/Solomonster, sign up, and you can cash in. And let me know what you think if you do download the book. ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. You can get yourself an official Sound Off logo shirt to represent the show wherever you go. Thank you, as always, for downloading the podcast. We will be back with a brand new episode 370 next weekend with Fastlane. WWE Fast Lane predictions. More like Fast Lame. That'll be next weekend. Until then, be well, stay safe. I will see you right back here next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
They give us the dreaded fuck finish. Lame, lame, lame. You want to do the finish where the guy gets DQ'd for kicking ass? How about not doing it with your Intercontinental Champion? How about that? Some of these matches will go 10, 12, 15 minutes only to get a fuck finish or no finish at all in the end. If WWE insists on fucking the fans over so many times, the least they can do is buy us dinner first.
Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.